Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members, please mute your mics. This remote hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at the House Television webcast. The Legislative Assistant will now take the roll.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhejiang. Vice Chair Zhejiang present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker. Baker. Dabney.
Dabney present.
Dabney present. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman.
Present.
Greenman present. Haley. Haley. Jurgens.
Jurgens present.
Jurgens present. Cagle.
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun.
Katiza Watun present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson.
Present.
Olson present. Tujong.
Present.
Tujong present. Baker. Baker. Haley. Haley. Chair Noor, we have quorum.
Thank you so much. There is a quorum present. So I'll now entertain a motion. Representative Hamilton, will you like to move the minutes approval for February 15th?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton moves the approval for minutes for February 15, 2021. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? See none. The motion prevails and minutes for February 15, 2021 are now approved. Members, we do have several bills. We have several bills that are related to Workforce Development Fund. And as we talked earlier, this is an issue that we're going to be addressing, talk about how we will be prioritizing the program with the department so that they can come and give us a briefing on what their intentions are going forward. So I just wanted to start with the first bill that Vice Chair Zhejiang has got two bills. I just wanted to start with him. Vice Chair Zhejiang, would you please move your bill and tell us about your bills? The first bill we have is House File 655.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make a motion to move House File 655 to be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Zhejiang. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Chair Noor, Representatives Hassan, Richardson, Gomez-Lee, Lang, Fraser, and Thompson for being co-authors of this legislation. I'm excited to present House File 655 before the committee today. This bill will provide $500,000 to Big Brothers and Big Sisters for workforce readiness, employment, exploration, and skills development for youth ages 4-21. As most of you know, Big Brothers and Big Sisters is the oldest and largest mentoring program in Minnesota, and they have received funding from the Workforce Development Fund for the last 8 years. With that, they have served nearly 1,200 youth through career readiness events, individualized college post-secondary training supports, and one-to-one mentoring. Mentoring youth and providing access to resources, skill building, and strong developmental relationships with caring can help address systemic racial inequities, supporting youth to be resilient leaders and achieve long-term success. This funding has allowed Big Brothers and Big Sisters Twin Cities to provide increased support to teens and their families related to career and college readiness during the pandemic and during the period of civil unrest during this past summer and this aftermath. The youth that Big Brothers and Big Sisters serves are more than 85% youth of color, And we know that they have been disproportionately impacted by these two crises. I think most of us sitting here can think of a caring adult health title path to success, yet one in three young people report they do not have a mentor. And what this program would do is provide more for our kids facing adversity with strong, enduring relationships that would help them beat the odds. And here testifying today are Deanna Thurgill, the Vice President of Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Twin Cities, and Michael Camilla and Doug Williams.
So we'll start with the first testifier, Ms. Thurgill. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and state your affiliation and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee. My name is Deanna Thurgill, and I'm the Vice President of Programs for Big Brothers Big Sisters Twin Cities. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to talk about our work in this bill and its importance. 2020 was our 100th anniversary, and so as we begin our 101st year, our mission is more important, we believe, than ever before. That mission is to ignite the power and promise of youth by creating and supporting mentoring relationships. We believe that all young people have great potential, yet we know that not all young people in our community have access to the same opportunities that will help them to fulfill that potential. Here in the Twin Cities, we served more than 3,300 youth last year, helping to bridge that opportunity gap through mentoring. Together with the BBBS agencies in Southern Minnesota, based in Owatonna and Faribault, and BBBS of Central Minnesota, based in St. Cloud, we collectively served 5,000 children last year in 14 different counties. We are requesting $500,000 for workforce readiness programs for the youth that we serve. This is the same amount that we currently receive, and we're deeply appreciative of the investment that the state has made through providing this workforce development funding for the past 8 years. This investment has helped us to be a leader within the BBBS national network and has also given us a unique ability to leverage these public resources with the private support, like that of Federated Insurance, who's made a significant investment in all three agencies. Through that investment last year, we were jointly able to award $115,000 in scholarship dollars to the kids that we serve. Through this funding from the state, we served 1,200 youth last year who were between the ages of 12 and 21, providing them with college and career events, individualized college and post-secondary training support, and one-to-one counseling to help them plan for, pursue, and complete college and career training. This work is more important today than ever before. Promoting an equitable and just community is a core part of BBBS Twin Cities values and our strategic plans. The events of the past year have deepened our commitment to racial equity. With your funding, we were able to provide career and college readiness services that were especially crucial during the closures and disruptions that happened in the beginning of the spring. Further, with private resources, we were able to help our families access the educational technologies and internet services that helped their young people to continue learning remotely as schools began to close. As Representative Zhang mentioned, more than 85% of the youth we serve are youth of color. Further, more than 87% of our families qualify for the free and reduced lunch programs. These families have been disproportionately and deeply impacted by these two crises in our community. We know that many of our families are struggling. They need help with other basic needs such as food, housing, healthcare, and workforce development services. Last month, we moved into a new home in North Minneapolis. We're energized and see this as an opportunity to better connect our families and youth with community partners to better blend our services and create a web of support around young people. In June, we created a new position that focuses on external partnerships to address equity and create innovative programming. One of these projects is run in partnership with Brooklyn Park, and it serves Black boys and teens, providing after-school programming and mentoring. Another program just launched in January is a pilot initiative. We're partnering with an organization out of Houston, and this project serves youth in Houston, New York, and then here in the Twin Cities, focusing on high school athletes. We've partnered with Coach McKenzie at North High here in Minneapolis, and this program will allow our kids to access national programming, which we will overlay with local mentoring. This work is important because we know mentoring works. Last year, BBBS Twin Cities graduation rate was 94%. More than 91% of our kids improved their grades and their academic performance, and 90% reported improved educational expectations. Studies show that littles are 75% more likely to receive a college degree and 52% less likely to skip school than their non-mentored peers. We are very thankful for the support from the state that helps us to work with our young people and create a stronger and more equitable workforce for Minnesota. At this point, I believe we'd like you to hear from one of our matches, our big brother Doug and little brother Michael.
Michael, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi. So before I begin, I just want to state my thanks for allowing me to speak with you today and give the story of an ever-growing, life-changing, 10-year-plus relationship in about 4 minutes. So I'm grateful to support Big Brothers Big Sisters organization passing this bill to provide support for the youth in need, just like me. My name is Michael Canella, and I've been matched as a little brother to my big brother, Doug, for a very long time. And that's why we put plus in 10-year plus. Way back when, in a world yet so different, I remember my mother telling me that she wanted me to start going outside. Me, addicted to video games and watching WWE, I could never, or so I thought. Two very tall gentlemen were welcomed into my house, one wearing a dark blue coat and another wearing a brown leather jacket. I was thinking to myself, I wonder which one's the guy my mom keeps talking about. My mom called me downstairs, and about 30 minutes later, I came down. I was about 7 years old, and two men who appeared as giants to me shook my hand. In a leather jacket, Doug said, "Hi, Michael. Pleasure to meet you." I was the shyest boy around, so my only three responses were yes, no, or a smile. I gave a nervous smile, and we went out on our first get-together. As years passed, my yeses and nos grew into me talking about what I did in the past week and asking for middle school dating advice. We would go do activities I've never done before, like playing mini golf, baseball, chess, and canoeing. My parents were divorced when I was 5, and my father was in a different house. So doing these things, these types of things, they were active, they were deep thinking activities with, I did with such a wise, humble, and loving man like my big brother, Doug. And he brought me out of my shell and prepared me for the life that I live now. I should also note that I grew up with two girls and one woman. Getting our hair done and shopping for a whole day was not in our arsenal. He asked me questions to think about, and at a young age, the questions grew on to me, and I started having answers for them. From 7th to 9th grade, I began to not hang around the best people, and I was influenced so heavily by my friends at the time that I started living a double life, and it eventually caught up, and I had to get out. So I started doing online school, just like a lot of us are now, from my home in the 10th grade. For 6 months, I gained about 30 pounds, became excessively depressed, and started to think about suicide. Life seemed like a black hole with all of my childhood getting sucked into it, and Doug eventually realized what was happening, and I started to lean more on him with my deepest hurts and thoughts. He would still pick me up every week to keep my head in the right place and do things other than sitting down for 15 hours to work on the classes I was failing in a gray winter in Minnesota. So because of the few people who knew about my issues like Doug, and God's grace and mercy, I was able to lose all the weight I gained and began to start lifting weights and hitting the treadmill. I got back into school, learned how to be social and cut loose ends with the people and thoughts of my past. I was back on track and stronger than ever. Months passed and the Big Brothers Big Sisters organization, along with Doug, started to encourage me in joining a program called Genesis Works. Now, that's a summer internship training program that provides you with an internship and guides you through the crazy world of post-high school graduation. With the encouragement and many conversations with Doug and the Big Brothers Big Sisters team, I went through one of the most competitive years at Genesis Works. I was accepted into the program, went through rigorous training, gratefully received an internship at Medtronic, been accepted into a few colleges, and made many, many connections through Genesis Works and Medtronic. Doug and the Big Brothers Big Sisters organization has helped that antisocial, depressed, and suicidal young man become the best person that he can be. And I gratefully say that they've helped me get set on the road that many at my age fear to endure. but through this organization and the lovely man that is Doug Williams, I'm happy and calmly ready for what my future brings. Thank you for considering this bill to support the hard work of the three Big Brothers Big Sisters agencies in Minnesota. The work done here is full of grace, empathy, and love. And with the requested funding, the Big Brothers Big Sisters organization will be able to keep bringing their long-lasting impact to all the current and future littles to pursue life headed in the right direction through graduating high school, going through post-secondary plans successfully, and receiving opportunities and wisdoms just like I have. This bill will keep the world continuing to spin with the strong and intelligent minds of the generations to come and will enable the youth to keep on keeping on. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Michael Canella. So I appreciate it. Now to the big brother, Mr. Williams, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and your affiliation and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Doug Williams. I'm a Minneapolis resident and actually a very recent business retiree. So I'm pleased to announce that. Hard act to follow with Michael. Obviously, very eloquent. He's just, I'm so proud of this young man and what he's becoming and so on. And so I just want to take a few minutes and talk about myself, talk about the Big Brothers organization, and I guess my experiences as well, and the rewards that I've gotten from this relationship. One of the things that Big Brothers has done is it's, you know, I've always said, and actually my father used to say, is we live very blessed lives, right? And so we're always looking for ways to give back. And I see giving back and helping children as a really good time spent. Michael and other children, especially those that don't have the privileges of some, I really am passionate about helping and giving them a leg up within our organizations, with our community, within our state, et cetera. And so one of the things that drives me to Big Brothers is my ability to give back. The Big Brothers organization themselves, I feel like they really provide the right level of, I'll call it, governance. They provide me with guidelines. They consult with me, you know, in working with Michael. They do all the right things. It's not too much. It's just the right amount. But I feel like the organization is really dialed in on helping bigs like myself, you know, when I have questions about Michael and things that I'm doing with Michael, questions I have, et cetera. So I feel like they really do a great job from that perspective. When I look at Michael, and as he said, we've been together for over 10 years. You know, Michael has grown so much. I wish you could have met him 10 years ago, but just his interpersonal skills, his confidence, his academics, as he talked about, all these things have continued to improve throughout his life. And now as a senior in high school, you know, we're looking at college readiness type conversations, and looking at the schools and what they have to offer. And so he's really set for a good adult life. And I think he has all the skill sets that he's learned himself with help to make him a successful adult and professional. The match is another thing that I wanted to talk about with the Big Brothers. Michael talked about that first afternoon or evening coming in and his mother introduced me to him. You know, there was a lot of work behind the scenes that I know the Big Brothers did, trying to profile me, where my interests were, and tried to match me with Michael. And I want to say that I think they did an outstanding job with that. And again, something that, you know, I want to credit them and part of the thing that they deliver to the match and to the organization. Some of the accomplishments, Michael stole my thunder, but I'm going to restate them anyway. Michael and I, one he didn't mention is we've been part of Feed My Starving Children for a number of years now. We do a mobile pack through my business out in Bloomington. Michael's been involved in that a number of years, and he and I are really committed to that organization and continue to work when possible. You know, the pandemic has kind of put a halt on some of that, but that's one area. Michael also mentioned Genesis Works. Through Genesis Works, he has an internship now with Medtronic and is doing an outstanding job of not only balancing that job with his high school work, but also college preparatory efforts and so on that he's working on for next year. So he's just doing a terrific job there. The final thing I wanted to just say is I really appreciate the opportunity to present to you folks. This is a really solid organization. And when I think about my tax dollars, this is something that I think it really warrants the funding that it gets and continues to get, hopefully, going forward here. I think the things that they're doing for the children are really outstanding. And I want to thank the Big Brothers organization for everything they do. With that, I'll turn it back to you unless you have any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Williams. We appreciate also the work that you do for many young people and the work you do every single day. So appreciate it. Members, any question? Discussions? Representative Cortez Otun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Zhang, for bringing this bill forward. So Mr. Williams, congratulations on your retirement. Back in 2019, my father passed away unexpectedly, but he was retired, and his retirement job was actually at the Big Brothers Big Sisters of Manitowoc County in Wisconsin, near where I grew up. And that job brought so much joy to his life. He spent most of his career being a high school social studies teacher as well as a high school principal. And so it was the first time that he actually got to be around younger students. And I know that it brought a lot of happiness into his post-retirement life. And I know that it was making a huge impact between the relationships that he was coordinating with the bigs and the littles. And I'm really pleased to support this bill on behalf of my dad and on behalf of all the children that we can help across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Cortez Otun. The next person is Representative Gehrman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I again want to say thank you to Representative Zhang. Big Brothers Big Sisters is a great organization, and I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I am happy to support it. And also just really want to appreciate you, Mr. Kalina, like telling your story, and want to say as you move forward in what I am sure, and I think we all probably would be sure will be a bright, successful career. Keep telling your story in places like this, bringing it to the legislature and talking about the important impact that it's had. Keep telling your story and blazing that bright future. It's really important, and it's important that everybody out there listening hears it and that we hear it. And so both to you, Mr. Kalina, Mr. Williams, and to the staff at Big Brothers and Big Sisters, thank you for the work you do. And I am proud to support it, and I hope that we can do more of it, and I hope we can hear more stories from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. The next person is Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for those comments, Representative Greenman. You conveyed a lot of the things I wanted to say, but I won't. I will say this, Michael, you are phenomenal with your testimony. I hope you realize that. You have a bright future, like Representative Greenman said. So my question to you is, you are introduced to us as a little brother receiving these services. Do you ever see you moving from that little brother to the big brother role?
Mr. Kamel.
I do. And I mean, to be honest with you, like right now, I kind of am already. My dad, he has two boys now. One of them is 5, one of them is 13. And I'm always there for their birthdays. I'm always there for Thanksgiving, Christmas, everything, and buying them presents, taking care of them, bathing them, you know. And yeah, definitely, I could definitely like do something and like be a big brother someday. Definitely, I definitely do that. Definitely, definitely, definitely.
Representative Hamilton.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the testifiers. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I echo the same sentiments. Thank you, Michael, for sharing your story, that powerful story that you shared with us. Thank you to Ms. Treadgill. And I usually go through the new building often on the 26th, the beautiful building on Northside. And so I look forward to supporting the youth and ensure that we do have dedicated funding to support young people so that they can succeed in life. So with that, Vice Chair Jaejeon, if you will renew your motion, and we can go to the next bill.
Thanks to all of this affairs. And to everyone for supporting this bill, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 655 be laid in liberal for possible inclusion.
Thank you so much to the testifiers, and thank you, Vice Chair Jaejeon. And now we will proceed to the next bill, House File 656. Vice Chair Jaejeon, please proceed and introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that House File 656 be laid over for possible inclusion in the House bill.
Please proceed and tell us about House File 656.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ranking Member Hamilton, Representative Hassan Richardson, Gomez Lee, Vane, Fraser, Thompson, Rice, Baker, Howard, and Frankie for supporting this bill. So, you know, I've carried this bill last biennium, and what House File 656 does is it's a they allocate $2 million per year to schools to provide workforce training in high demand fields in the metro and in greater Minnesota. Most of you know that schools has been around for 40 years and has been a backbone in our Latinx community throughout the state. Schools has received direct appropriation each year since 2016, and at that time, the legislature had decided to directly fund key organizations because business as usual wasn't working. And so right now, it's more critical than ever to invest in proven job training initiatives as our state emerges from this pandemic. And with me today is dear friend, Ruby Lee, president of CLUES, and Krista Homer, a workforce trainer, and Jennifer Mendoza, the director of CLUES in Wilmer, to share more about this legislation.
Ms. Lee, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ruby Lee. I'm president of CLUES, Comunidades Latinas Unidas en Servicio, or in English, Latino Communities United in Service. First, I want to express my gratitude to Representative Xiong and the co-authors on this bill for their continued support as they are true partners in the community with us, and we try to bring our community forward. To you. I'd like to ask, we have slides that we would like to present. Today, I want to give you a quick introduction for some of you who may not know about CLUES. We have slides that we want to share. Here we go. So introduction about CLUES, and then I have two of my colleagues provide some information regarding the work that we do. Our mission is to advance social and economic equity in the community, and as we work with community on specifically looking at strengthening the diversity of our community, uplifting the people that we serve, and certainly supporting their place in community. Next slide, please. About CLUES, we have we are the largest Latino-led organization. We have been around for over 40 years now, and provide bilingual, bicultural services. You will get a little glimpse of the depth of services that we provide as it relates to this bill. Our staff and volunteers serve over 35,000 people annually. I will address a little bit about the workforce and how we have had to reshift our services because of COVID. Our focus, particularly when we welcome participants or clients into CLUES, is to provide a home, to provide a family that can support people, meet them where they're at. But our initial attempt is also to look at the full development of the individual, also with a family-centered transformational impact that we aim to have. Ideally, our work is to move people not only from perhaps a moment of survival mode into providing different interventions that create transformational impact long-term. So as we do our work holistically, we also look at intergenerational work that focuses not only on the parents or the adult, but also the children and even the elders in the family. Our services are focused on a one-stop hub. We have a wonderful building in the east side of St. Paul, which has a very low income community in the neighborhood, and it's in Representative Sean's district. We have offices and services in Minneapolis, and we have a one-person shop in Wilmer and Austin. And this, the support that we have received in the past from the legislature has allowed us to expand into greater Minnesota. There's tremendous demand for our work and our services at CLUS. People come to us for different needs, but as we bring into rural areas the workforce training, it also allows us to have a physical presence in the community where people feel welcome and where they can, again, be connected to services and impactful transformational interventions, if you may, that would allow them to move into social mobility. We aim to be a catalyst for community building community assets. So building prosperity is at the top of our goals. And also as we look at either neighborhood or community development, it's also where we look at the overall high level impact. Next slide. Primarily, we are addressing as of today, some of the main needs that community are coming to us for continue to be employment, workforce development, or skills building, support for housing, food insecurity, and access to healthcare. We have clinical services as well for mental and chemical health, which a lot of the times also relates to employment. So people come to us from different windows or different doors, and we connect all this prosperity building or socioeconomic mobility building interventions into the overall transformational impact. Besides these services, we obviously have other specific goals that we serve at CLUS, but for today, I want to focus on this piece as we address the devastating impact of the socioeconomic disparities that our community faces. Next slide. Latino workers have not been able to access opportunities in the same way that other workers perhaps have. Just as a matter of context, the Latino workforce in Minnesota, as well as in the state, we have one of the largest participation workforce in the state. We have a young community, and a lot of our young people are the majority of the demographic in our community. So we know that we have a potential there to connect the workforce of tomorrow to the needs of Minnesota. You all know how Minnesota has a shortage of employees, and even though COVID-19 hit, we still have the opportunity to connect those jobs and produce more jobs as well as connect the employees to that. And that's what we are trying to do with the support that we're requesting today. For many of the people that we are seeing, we are having people walking in who have worked in the same employment for 20 years. And for the first time, they have had to seek support, for example, in whether it's healthcare or housing support. We are connecting those services to the clients that we have. But at the same time, we try to connect them to opportunities to rebuild their skills, to shift their support in terms of employment specifically and workforce. So I perceive that in this year in 2021 and in the coming years, we will also be connecting workforce to not only services and support, but also employment and getting people back to work. Most of the workers that we see today have faced either reductions in income due to reduced hours or have lost employment completely and are trying to get back on their feet. And this is where CLUS then comes in to not only provide the support, but also connect and provide the technical skills that you will hear in a minute about. Latinos have, as you know, have been for the most part connected as essential workers. And sometimes you know, a little bit of the skills that we provide just provide the next level of that career ladder that moves them into the next wage that they can achieve. Next slide. I just wanted to quickly share, in case anybody's interested, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'm not going to go into detail, but we have been there for the community. Our services have connected because of COVID in 2020, connected some of those, the care funding into supporting direct cash assistance through counties, through cities, partnerships, and helping people with a lot of the housing needs, homeless prevention, also direct assistance specifically for people to prevent eviction. We have provided support in, again, in the area of emergency relief for those that did not have access to any public support. And more importantly, in the area of food, we have been reaching over 60,000 or 70,000 individuals and have distributed over 500,000 pounds of food, where we connect fresh produce, cultural foods, and helping people earn a different source of income in that ladder of opportunity that we connect. Being in the community is critical, and we can certainly talk more about it if that's at the pleasure of the group. Next slide. Our bill focuses particularly House File 656 on supporting CLUES to expand services. We have had tremendous demand. While the legislature has helped us in the past, we continue to have demand in many other rural areas, in many other communities, and your expanded support will allow us to continue to address employment and economic disparities, not only in the metro area, but in greater Minnesota. Our expansion in our work is culturally tailored. It includes education, job skills, aiming at obtaining higher wages and moving people in that socioeconomic mobility piece. And obviously adding up activities and programs that can help provide career pathways for our young Latino population. The support from the bill will be addressing our ability to connect workforce readiness in customized employment services. And it will also fund short-term certifications. As we are in close contact with the clients and the people that we serve, we also listen to what is appropriate and what is the type of training that today they need. And you will be hearing from my colleagues who are in the trenches, in the front lines, following this presentation. So I thank you for your time, and I will pass it on to my colleague, Krista Comer, who will tell you a little bit more about our work.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lee. Ms. Comer, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Krista Comer. I'm the Career Development Manager at CLUES, and I want to thank the chair and the committee for taking the time to hear this testimony in support of our bill this afternoon. I've been involved with CLUES for about 5 years now, beginning my time in our community as a trainer and a curriculum writer in these very workforce programs that we're speaking on today. I've had the pleasure and honor of developing these programs alongside an amazing team of bilingual, bicultural, skilled, and certified staff members who come from the very communities that we serve. Our team's priority and passion is to help the community gain measurable skills, as mentioned, and equitable access to essential supportive services that lead them into finding stable employment. By creating a model and curriculum that's culturally responsive, interdepartmentally woven, and backed by CLUES trained and certified financial coaches for each student, we've moved over 777 of your constituents in our community through training and into stable employment within the past 5 years. Thanks to your support in the past, we've been able to continually expand our services to include training in industries valued by our community members, including certified nursing assistants, the finishing trades, welding, commercial driving, banking and customer service, IT, as well as youth career exploration. An important part of what we do is connecting with local employers, various hiring networks, and other local leaders of color that work together to advance our communities and reduce inequities and gaps. We seek to develop and maintain relationships with our employers who value our unique bilingual, bicultural leverage in the workplace of Latinos, and that want to see us grow into prosperity through sustainable and increasing wages and benefits. During COVID-19, we've had to make many shifts in our approach to adapt transferable skills building and remote learning in a rapidly increasing technical world. In our community, as with many BIPOC communities, we had already been faced with insurmountable hardship, including a steep tech gap. With the help of funding such as this one, we were able to purchase and deliver over 140 computers to your constituents through our department alone, as well as create a holistic approach to providing one-stop shop services across multiple departments, a longstanding goal and vision at Clues. This was only the first of many successes for us in 2020. We then had to prioritize our methods of registration, delivery, and teaching to address the learning gaps for those who had never had access to computers or the education around functioning the new technology on their own, rewriting and restructuring our program within the first 2 months of the pandemic. So since May of 2020, during the pandemic and civil unrest, we've successfully hosted 11 cohorts of trainees in both the cities and greater Minnesota in the industries that you see listed here. With multiple cohorts currently in session and clients continuing to enroll and seek employment with newfound skills and certifications, we're happy to report that these programs have been a huge success within our community. Next slide, please. As we continue to seek ways to develop, support, and engage our underserved young Latinos, 16 to 24 across the state, we hope to build upon the services that this funding had helped establish and make popular. Of 325,000 Latinos in Minnesota, 45% of them are under the age of 20. And with your support, we will be able to continue to expand our services to skill these young workers as they are the workforce of tomorrow. And we need to invest in their career development. Programs that have seen success in our communities like this include Youth at Work programming. In 1 year, we served over 50 youth in career exploration and paid skills training, and then placed 25 of the top candidates in short-term internships in local high-demand industries. This funding also supported events like the Youth Conference that brings together over 200 families a year to network and share resources and education around financial stability, higher education, career exploration, health and well-being, and so much more. In addition, this funding would be used to continue our expansion of services in greater Minnesota, in cities where the Latino community relies on our presence and support. With the continued support of the legislature, we look forward to continuing to be our community's first point of contact for training, support, equitable access, and the confidence to continue to seek sustainable employment and to continue to invest in education and growth. And with that, I'd like to hand it over to my colleague, Jennifer Mendoza. Thank you, Julieta. Please, next slide.
Thank you so much, Ms. Como, for your testimony. Ms. Mendoza, please welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Jennifer Mendoza, and thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for having us here today. Since 2018, I've been working with Clues as their career navigator and community liaison here in the Willmar area. I've lived in Minnesota my entire life. In fact, I've lived in Willmar, Minnesota for most of that. Before Clues, Willmar had WAMBC, the Willmar Area Multicultural Business Center. Sadly, after 10 years of prosperity, helping the low-income and minority communities start businesses, they shut their doors. I was the president at the time. It was the saddest thing I had to do, but I was so happy that I was able to come to Clues and continue supporting our community. So Clues has been wonderful and a key organization in filling the gap for the Latino community in my area. Clues has done its best to assimilate into the community. Our current downtown storefront entrance, located across from La Fiesta, a local grocery store, and around the corner from the hospital, have helped wonderfully with this. People often come into the office looking for assistance. What I usually see is that they're looking for positions, jobs, or Spanish-speaking services. After some conversation, usually we set up goals, identify their strengths, and we're able to find a fit for their need or request. Some of the people that we serve are in need of further support, especially in these difficult and new times. COVID has brought awareness to Clues. We know that adults don't have the equipment they need for themselves browse the internet, right? Or actually, they probably have their phone. We've actually seen this where a lot of classes had individuals who were trying to do classes off their cell phone. So anyways, it's very difficult, you know, looking for a job on your cell phone, that's easy. However, writing a resume off of your cell phone is something totally different. We have been happy to fill these gaps. In fact, in the last 4 months, with the use of one computer, we have been able to have 3 participants complete their class. So we are trying to always use our resources to the best of our ability. With the workforce development, we've had a lot of success, especially in our certified nursing assistants course, which was one of the first that we offered here in Willmar. There are no shortage of community members wanting to be certified or positions available to hire them. Take Monica, for example. Monica is in the second from the left photo on the bottom. And she came to Clues working at a family business where she was making $18. That is just over $16,500 a year. So Monica was able to take her class. She has held employment consistently with a clinic in her town. And she works 3 different positions there. She works as a CNA, she works the front desk, and she works as an interpreter. Those vary hugely on her income. And it all depends on what is the need for the day. So Monica, you know, continues to provide stability to her family with their income and benefits. In fact, she currently reached out to me recently and she's looking for upward movement in the medical field. So I am very happy for her. In fact, I hear a lot of my certified medical assistants wanting to increase their health career. I would probably say 1/4 of the individuals that start as a certified nursing assistant or a CNA do look forward to upward movement. Many of the individuals looking to get certified as a nursing assistant have already worked in the field, and the things that they do are often more intense than a certified nursing assistant would actually be expected to do in a regular setting. Yet, these individuals are paid less than they are, or they make less than a certified nursing assistant while having more of the responsibility. Our training is often a lifeline to our community, offering approximately $15 an hour for a certified nursing assistant. Like I said, Monica's a CNA in her community, and I feel like because it's a smaller community, that's why, again, the pay is lower. Here in my area, the individuals do make $15 an hour. We're currently looking forward to expanding our CDL, our commercial driver's license program. And I know that it will be equally successful, if not more, because of the high demand in this field. Many of our community members are actually hired for like the seasonal trucking, and they enjoy it so much that they want to get their license. So, you know, it's a blessing to be able to have them get that experience before getting into the actual course. And now if I can please play our video. Sorry, that's on our next slide. Thank you.
Hey, how's it going, guys? This is Victor.
We lost audio.
I'll tell you guys a little bit about how Clues has been helping me out on getting my CDL. Did a little driving for a farmer and kind of fell in love with it. Made good money. You actually make way more money with your CDL than driving for a farm truck. Some of the things that I've been learning right now, some of my favorite things actually have been the online course. I took a bunch of notes because it teaches you on the paperwork, the legalism part of owning a successful company, and things that you want to maintain as well, you know, like a score behind your CDL. Right now I'm on my second part of the CDL where I'm actually taking the test now. So it's been very fun, and working with Jennifer has been awesome and easy. And I highly recommend, if you're looking into joining Clues, it's a big blessing, to tell you the truth.
Thank you. I don't know if you heard my phone in the background while I was presenting, but my heart is really moving because Victor just took his second part of his test, okay? And he called me, and it's a little hard not to answer it, but I want to be with you guys, so I'm going to move forward. I'm sure everything went well. Victor's like the clients that I see on every day. You know, the funds that we receive cover the cost of the commercial driving course. We also reimburse our participants. You know, it's so hard to have upward movement if you don't feel like you have an extra $20. And I know for some of us, that sounds crazy. But if it's your last $20 and you've got to decide where it goes, it's probably not going on your permit for your CDL. You know, that's just economic problems. But like I said, we reimburse our participants. The cost that we spend per student is approximately $6,000, and it's really a small investment for a lifelong prosperity building opportunity. Like I said, I love my job. I could talk to you about it all day. So people I see are often employed, and they're looking to better tomorrow. Many would like to open their own business, you know. That's a big thing, right, for minority individuals. We want to open our business. We want to do our work, and I'm excited for them when they are able to accomplish that. Many just give me a blessing to be able to take a glimpse at their journey. I'm so excited to be able to look in and be like, wow, you know, I saw you here. You've got a few more kids, and now you're here, and this is awesome, you know. And I'm obviously talking in time, you know, not just minutes. To know that I can help a person who is dedicated to their employment. For example, I have one participant who is dedicated to their employment for over 20 years. He's been working for this employer. He's making $16 an hour, but with the 8-week course of CDL driving or commercial driver's license course, he can easily be making $20 an hour. And who knows what he'll be transporting. I mean, maybe he'll be transporting the many vegetables that I get to see in my area. You know, maybe he'll be delivering my next online shopping spree. All I can do is be happy that they're making steps towards the future that they want for themselves with the assistance that Clues gives them. Unlike some agencies, Clues has no problem finding community members to fill our courses. With your continued support.
Ms. Mendoza. I don't want to cut you off. I know there are questions that we're being asked. So I just wanted to give members the opportunity to ask questions. We also have two more bills. So
no problem.
If you can wrap your testimony, and then we'll go to the questions.
Yes. So like I said, we are always trying to get people involved. And I appreciate your assistance today. I hope that you can help us help our areas be healthy, profitable, and populated.
Thank you, Ms. Mendoza, for your testimony. Representative Baker, you have a question.
No question, Mr. Chair. Just a great statement. I want to tell you how much I have thoroughly enjoyed working with Clues over the years. Ruby runs a great organization. And if you think Jennifer's excited out in Wilmer, it's only because she lives in my district. But she is a real signal of a lot of energy that we have out there. She's a great provider of direction and help. I couldn't be more proud of Clues taking a firm footprint right in Wilmer the last few years, and they've made a huge impact there. I think funding for this organization is terrific, and it's been proven over and over again. I just wanted to say thank you, Representative Jay Zhang, for bringing this forward. Fully support this, and thank you so much for this. Good job, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Baker, for your statement. And members, any questions? Any questions? I just wanted to thank Ms. Lee and Clues Comunidad so for your work that you do. And I think the commitment that we have to look into, knowing from the data that we were presented with, the Latinos in Minnesota are impacted by COVID-19, and also for the lack of upward mobility in terms of employment and closing the opportunity gaps. It's something that we will have to be able to cross different issues. So I appreciate that work. Representative Jejong, if you will conclude us and renew your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair,
to the members and to the testifiers for being here today. Mr. Chair, you wrapped it up greatly, so I'm not going to say much, but I'm just going to say I'd like to renew that motion that House File 656 be laid over for possible inclusion in this.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Zhejiang renews his motion. House File 656 be recommended for possible inclusion in the Workforce and Business Development Omnibus Bill. So thank you so much, members, for hearing. Now we go back to the first bill that was on our agenda, that is House File 873, Representative Hassan. So I will move House File 873 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Hassan, welcome to the committee, and proceed and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Today I present to you House File 873, an act relating to workforce development, appropriating money for performance grants to AFIVO. As you know, AFIVO is a trusted nonprofit organization that increases the well-being of individuals by pairing chemical and mental health services with career education, training, and employment services to help them achieve recovery, employment, career advancement, while also working to end homelessness. They have served the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota since 1960s. AFIVO serves nearly 13,000 individuals and their children each year, and helps 3,000 enter employment that leads to careers, including helping 2,000 people move off of welfare every year. They serve individuals and families who face the largest disparities and barriers to employment, health, homelessness, mental illness, substance use disorder, chronic unemployment, and poverty. They are one of the few organizations that integrate chemical and mental health services with career, education, and employment. In the summer of 2019, I was able to tour AFIVO's sober housing. It was wonderful to see the mothers in recovery, to have a place to stay and a supportive system that caters to their families. If we were in normal times, I would encourage everyone to do a tour of AFIVO. But as we know, because of COVID, we have limitations. AFIVO's Institute for Career and Technical Education is licensed by the State of Minnesota Office of Higher Education and accredited by CURB. They offer eight career training tracks for individuals to learn and in industry recognized credentials and credits that transfer to MNSCU, institutions of higher learning and intercareers. AFIVO is seeking $650,000 in pay for performance grants to increase the number of people they can provide career training and employment for, thereby increasing the number of jobs they can help their Minnesota business partners fill. I feel honored to carry this legislation. As a mental health clinician by trade, I sometimes feel like that I'm disconnected from my work by being in the legislator, but this work, doing something like this, connects me to my work. With that, Mr. Chair, I have Kaylee Matter, who is the president and CEO of AFIVO, to give us an overview.
Ms. Kelly, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and proceed, please.
Thank you so much, Representative Hassan, Chair Noor, and all of the members of the committee for having me today and for your support of AFIVO and our work. My name is Kelly Matter. As Representative Hassan said, I'm the president and CEO of AFIVO. And our mission is to increase well-being through recovery and career advancement while working to end homelessness. And as Representative Hassan shared, we're leaders in the fields of chemical mental health treatment, as well as career pathways, training, and employment. And now more than ever, in this last year that has been like no other, I am most thankful that Avivo remains here, that we remain here serving our community. Much of our work is considered essential services, and our team has been absolutely fearless and creative in identifying safe and effective ways to provide treatment, to teach classes, to connect un- and underemployed Minnesotans to jobs, and connect hundreds of individuals who've experienced unsheltered homelessness to housing. And so I'm just gonna share a few outcomes that are really focused on this last year, this last year where the pandemic and civil unrest and many other things plagued all of us. So Avivo has relocated over 200 individuals now who were living in encampments and outdoors to a hotel, and have since helped over 160 of them connect to permanent housing. With the most recent cold snap that just occurred, we launched our third hotel to home initiative and have moved an additional 50 people into a hotel, one who's already gotten permanent housing, but we'll keep working with them to get permanent housing. We continue to provide in-person substance use and mental health treatment services. When a lot of providers did move to primarily telehealth, we learned new ways, and we did a combination of telehealth and in-person, but we remained here in-person, and people sought our services out now, you know, more than ever, as I've said. We did reimagine a lot of our place-based mental health services. We relaunched what were three place-based, a kind of clubhouse model services for individuals with serious mental illness, to doing them in the community. One is focused on food. It's called FoodWorks. Another is focused on nature. And the other is our long-standing ArtWorks program. But we're doing them over Zoom, and we're doing them outside, with the exception of maybe the last week. We're doing those outside in parks and different venues that are safe during this pandemic. We did deploy 150 laptops and telehealth, so our staff could do telehealth over a Zoom, a private platform. But then we also deployed over 300 laptops to individuals serving where there was a significant digital divide, so that people could receive therapy services, but could also attend our reimagined partially in-person, partial virtual career classrooms as well. So we launched our very first hybrid Avivo Institute for Career and Technical Education that did include, as I said, some in-class where we've got 50% capacity, partitions in between students, and students rotating in person and over the computer. We have not had any COVID cases since moving to this hybrid model, and students are graduating and getting jobs. Our latest endeavor is Avivo Village, which are 100 tiny homes in a warehouse in the North Loop. Again, focus on moving unsheltered Minnesotans into emergency shelter where they can get health care, mental health care, connection to the Avivo Institute, and ultimately permanent housing and permanent employment. And we have been able to connect over 1,500 individuals to employment since last March with an 85% retention rate, those that have hit their six-month milestone. So like the previous testifiers, there's good work being done in our community. And it's been done in partnership with hundreds of other organizations, our partnership with the state, the cities and the counties that we work with as well, that have provided us the flexibility to learn and serve in new ways. We've been fortunate to receive the support of the state through a direct appropriation in past sessions that helped people enter our career pathways training at the Avivo Institute to earn credentials, to earn credits that transfer to MNSCU institutions as well. For us in this session, and for us to continue to be part of the solution, connecting thousands of low-wage, unemployed, underemployed Minnesotans, we are asking, as Representative Hassan said, for a $650,000 in fiscal year 2022, or 2022, and $650,000 in fiscal year 2023, and in a different way than we've done in the past, but using the performance-based grants approach that is legislated and set up with milestone payments. I believe Travis has a brief video. We had a difficult time finding a participant that could testify at 1 o'clock. Most people go to work as soon as they graduate, and we thought we had someone, but their work schedule shifted, and work comes first. So I do have a brief video if it works.
Hi,
And then I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you so much for your time.
Mr. Reese will be sharing that video if technology allows.
Fingers crossed.
I have never actually shared my screen before. I'm happy to facilitate with other folks, but me, myself, not. Oh, there it is. All right.
Mr. Reese, we cannot hear the...
That I am not sure of then.
You should have clicked share the audio at the same time when you're sharing.
Mm-hmm. Try it again then. Thanks everybody for your patience.
Chair is the expert on IT, so he can help.
Let's try that again. I clicked the chair sound button. Let me try that again.
I work two jobs because I'm single mom. I used to work on the customer service at the spa, but because of pandemic, so everything is down. So they lay off all employees.
So entering the career education at Avivo, I was kind of scared. I had never done this before, but I knew I wanted to make a change.
So I got a chance to go back to school again. Just a couple of students, and this, your city is far away from one another. And so when I came to the door, so someone is waiting me and ask a couple questions. I got a background of IT when I was in back home, so I would like to continue my education and my career in IT industry.
Being there every day and studying hard was a big part of me graduating and eventually going to the state of Minnesota and passing the exam, the license.
For the future, I just want to keep myself learning things and try to find out, like I said, a better job to support my kids.
In a nutshell, the class really helped me change my life.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you, Kelly Mata, for sharing that information with us. Members, any discussions or questions? Representative Frankie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this forward. I got the honor and opportunity to tour the Avivo program a couple years back myself. And when I talk about recovery and addiction and the way things should be and the way things ought to be and the transition points of raising people up and trying to help them assist themselves become a more positive person. One of the programs that I always point to is Avivo. I was very impressed by how they handled the transition of somebody, you know, battling addiction, changing their lives and bringing them along and then offering the opportunities like they're discussing right now to better themselves, their standing and their opportunities. So I just once again want to thank Representative Hassan. I want to thank Kelly Matter for all her hard work with this program. And I will be supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frankie. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is to, I think this question would be to Ms. Matter. Do you find that, you know, a lot of times when there's substance abuse disorders, criminal records also come along with that? And so was just kind of curious about how much of a barrier of that criminal background is in the program that you work with.
Ms. Matter.
Thank you, Representative Cagle, for your question. It is a significant barrier. When individuals start our intensive outpatient treatment program, 98% of them are homeless when they start. So we do, you know, as Representative Hassan said, she toured our transitional recovery housing. We do provide housing for individuals. And many times, you know, over 70% also are coming with some type of a background in the criminal justice system. So, it, you know, those are barriers. They're tough to overcome. It's tough to get housing. It does impact, you know, the jobs that people can apply for. But we certainly work with people to, you know, align, you know, with a career pathway that that is, you know, that they are going to be successful in and set people up for success regardless of what barriers they have.
Representative Cagle.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm assuming, too, then you guys also have mental health support as well, or is that something?
Ms. Mata?
Yes, thank you for your question. Yes, we do. So our treatment program, our intensive outpatient treatment is a dual program with chemical and mental health support. We also do have a Rule 29 mental health clinic. And I think, you know, also important is we do long-term support. We provide targeted case management for individuals with a serious mental illness that are eligible for that. And if they're not eligible for that level of support, we do provide long-term support to everyone that we help connect to employment.
Mm-hmm. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair, you are muted.
Oh, sorry about that. I've been talking a lot. Ms. Madan, Representative Hassan, I think the program here is noted as pay for performance. I know this is a discussion that we are extensively having. And also there's some programs that are called pay for results or pay for success. I know some of those initiatives have been moving forward in terms of outcome-based, result-based, and those are based on a positive outcome. And we know those initiatives take a long time to see the success. What is the difference of a normal program based on a pay for performance? Ms. Mata?
So thank you, Chair Noor. I'll try to answer your question, and if I don't, please let me know. So I think we have operated off of a variety of pay-for-performance or pay-for-outcomes contracts, which, you know, and they're set up differently. This one, you know, we are basing it off the pay-for-performance legislation that is in place. And so it does mean that you get paid at milestones, and typically that is, you know, when a person goes to work, when there's retention milestones and or a certain level of wages milestones. It does mean, you know, that we are doing and need to do other fundraising up front, you know, in order to provide these services before we get paid. So there, you know, there are other not-for-profits that, you know, are seeking maybe a direct appropriation or another manner of funding that maybe don't have that capacity to do that fundraising. But over years of getting direct appropriations and increasing our fundraising, we are pursuing this path. I hope that answered your question.
To some extent, yes. Thank you so much. Representative Cagle, I see you raised your hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That just kind of popped into my, another question popped into my brain while you were explaining that. And I was just wondering if you were ever able to get any kind of medical reimbursements too for some of the services you provide?
So we certainly do for our chemical and our mental health services. We get, you know, through the prepaid medical assistance program because we are serving, you know, a population of people who are extremely poor. And so they, through Medicaid and the prepaid medical assistance program, doesn't pay for the training or employment services. It pays for the substance use and mental health services. Yes.
Representative Cagle? Well, thank you so much, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill forward. Any closing remarks before I renew the motion?
Nothing. I just ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mata, and also Representative Hassan. I renew my motion, House File 873, be recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Having said that, the next bill is House File 530. Chair Dovney, please introduce your bill and proceed. Chair Devney. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Apparently, of all ironies, the internet in the state office building is unstable. So I missed your reference to me. I apologize. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 530 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in a future bill.
We now have House File 530. Chair Devney, please introduce your bill and proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. House File 530 proposes $425,000 each of the next 2 years to Better Futures. Better Futures transforms the lives of men recently released from prison for felony-level offenses by providing them with job training, industry-recognized employability certificates, coaching, and job search support. It does this through an earned revenue model, saving materials from flowing into the waste stream. They train program participants in appliance recycling and deconstruction services. Complementing their earned revenue model with state support from the Workforce Development Fund will support Better Futures in their important work, supporting men being successful in their housing, employment, family, and community lives. Mr. Chair, with me today is the CEO of Better Futures, Charlene Leach. I'd ask her to speak at this time.
Thank you, Chair Devney. Ms. Leach, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. You're muted.
Thank you. My name is Charlene Leach, and I'm the president and CEO of the Network for Better Futures. Network for Better Futures is an organization that provides mental and physical health support, housing, job skill training, transitional employment, assistance with full-time employment, and in a few weeks, our services will extend to providing child support and family reunification services for formerly incarcerated men. Over the past 14 years, the Better Futures Network focused substantial attention and resources to providing opportunities for successful reentry. Our programs have proven quite successful in that the average recidivism rate in Minnesota is around 61%. We've seen our recidivism rate reach as low as 5%, and we continue to strive for 0%. Since 1993, the U.S. prison population saw a 20% growth, while Minnesota saw a massive 50% increase. Only 4 of 50 states saw a greater growth than Minnesota. The challenge posed by reentry is a critical one for Minnesota, as it is for other states. Due to unprecedented prison growth, Minnesota citizens are expected to see a large number of individuals released to their communities in the coming years. Historically, 2/3 of those released are rearrested within 3 years of their release at great cost to the state and to the families and communities from which they come. Our efforts, in collaboration with public agencies, community, and faith-based groups in the state, have been designed to figure out how we can keep that from happening. If there is a key point I'd like to leave you with today, it's that these barriers to reentry are cumulative. They reach every aspect of an individual's life, and most importantly, directly affect their ability to do what is expected of them upon reentry, such as work, stay out of trouble, and support their families. Some of the examples of those barriers include employment. There are about 22 categories of jobs that are subject to permanent lifetime bans on individuals with certain kinds of convictions, primarily those that constitute crimes of moral turpitude. An expanding category of jobs have mandatory background checks. While the Ban the Box initiative levels the playing field in theory, it still does not stop discrimination once the employer knows about a criminal background. Housing. Allowing someone who is just released from prison for a drug offense to stay with you, and research shows that family support can be key to reentry success, can be grounds for eviction from private housing. Landlords can exclude someone solely on the basis of a criminal record. Public housing authorities may exclude or evict individuals with criminal convictions for certain crimes as well. Two failed drug tests will permanently disqualify an individual from receiving public assistance, a much needed resource for stability. I can speak in further detail about these or other areas such as child support and license suspension, parental rights, education, voting, and jury services. The Network for Better Futures has worked extensively to ensure our participants receive not only the support, but the structure they need to make a successful reentry. What I'd like to focus on today is our training program and business lines that prepare formerly incarcerated men with the opportunity to enter into the workforce. Our training programs include: each individual that enters our program receives OSHA 10 and OSHA 30. We currently provide certification classes for OSHA for all participants. This occupational safety certification opens the door to jobs in safety, construction, and production. Forklift driver certification, an industry standard certificate that certifies the participant has met the requirements of understanding how to drive a forklift and can do so safely. After completing a mandatory safety instruction, our men are provided with transitional employment opportunities in one of our business lines. Our business lines include corporate cleaning services, year-round property maintenance, appliance recycling, and deconstruction. I also want to point out that in all of our services, we aim to reduce the overall environmental impact. With our cleaning services, while we will utilize products requested by the customer, our de facto products are environmentally safe. Our appliance recycling services reduce greenhouse emissions, and our deconstruction services, along with our reuse warehouse, reduces materials from being sent to Minnesota landfills. We plan to extend our service provision to greater Minnesota community so that individuals that don't live in our housing programs can access our services. Our goal is to create 150 living wage jobs within the next year that will be available to both men and women in Minnesota communities. Before I leave, I would like to share a program that we are currently evaluating for replication and modeling. We are currently working on landfill diversion in Becker County. Through that program, we have employed a young man that is currently incarcerated but has work release privileges. The uniqueness of a program such as this is that it allows us to impact the lives of incarcerated individuals, instill programmatic values around employment and family connectedness, although not a current recipient of our services, nor are they living in our housing program. We do look forward to being able to offer this young man employment upon his release. Thank you for your time and your attention, and I'm available to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Leach, for your testimony. Members, any questions? Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Dabney, for bringing this forward. My question is for Ms. Leach. I'm just wondering, how do you reach out to the potential clients of your program upon release from the system? Because I'm guessing, you know, we want to have that information available to them to get them the assistance right away. So what type of a network do you have to promote your service is just my quick question. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We actually work with agents and judicial officials. We have a very strong referral network. I'd say upward of 80% of our program participants are referred to us from someone that is involved with the legal system. One of the things we're working on this year, we're actually going to create an online portal that we will be working with, prison officials to see if the men can have access to, so that they can actually, once they're 6 months out from release, they can actually apply for our programming so we can begin the necessary groundwork. Most of our men come to us directly from prison. There's no break in between. They leave the prison, they arrive at our at our facility, and they're provided with a place to stay.
Representative Frankie?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's great, Ms. Leach. Thank you. I was just wondering, you know, communication is the key to getting people assistance upon reentering society just having those connections to be able to build your program and build these availabilities So thank you for the answer. Thank you, Chair Noor.
Thank you so much, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Leach, I may have missed it. How many people do you work with? How many clients do you have on an annual basis, roughly?
On an annual basis, we have anywhere between 75 and 150 people that we provide housing services to. We do internal and external employment, and that can be anywhere from another 100 and 150 individuals over the course of the year. With our new initiative coming up, again, our goal is to add an additional 150 living wage jobs.
Representative Hamilton.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Leach, I had the opportunity to basically be showing around a couple of the correctional facilities that we have here in Minnesota. And in one in particular, they took me through, it was basically a shop. They were building furniture and doing a number of things like that, job training. And so they were, the individuals were receiving real life skills, if you will, that could very easily be transferred out once they're released. So I definitely see a value here as you being a catalyst, not only for individuals that may not have received that training, but also the individuals that have, right, to be able to connect them with the jobs that are available here in Minnesota. So thank you. I appreciate that.
If I could just quickly respond to that, we actually have a furniture making pilot project that we are working on right now.
Very nice. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Leach.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. I just wanted to ask Ms. Leach, you may have covered this briefly, the two generational support that the programs that you provide in terms of the whole family. Can you briefly touch on that?
Yes. So one of the biggest issues for incarcerated men is child support, the issues that come along with child support. And quite honestly, long-term prisoners coming out and not having a relationship with their children. We will be initiating next month a two-gen program that will actually work on family reunification. We will not only be providing mental health services to the man, but we will be providing mental health services to the entire family. And those mental health services will also be looking at what that family needs to find reunification. And that could be the establishment of a relationship. I mean, we have children and fathers who don't know each other at all. We have created space here in our facility to facilitate children coming in, and our long-term goals include supporting our men who might have visitation rights and being able to visit with their children here and actually have them spend the weekend here at the facility with them.
Thank you, Ms. Leach, for your testimony. Representative Chair Devney, if you can give us your final remarks and renew your motion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, thank you for the word catalyst, because I think that is a great way to explain the role of the Network for Better Futures. It's important that we as policymakers think about how we use our limited state dollars to have the greatest impact, both on individual Minnesotans, but also on the state more broadly. These men, it's easy to see the challenges that they bring, but important to also see the assets they have. And when we support the Network for Better Futures, their ability to enhance those assets. And really, members, what it gets down to is we want these men to be successful for themselves, but also when they're successful, Minnesota is more successful. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 530 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Leach.
Thank you all. Thank you, Chair Devney. Having said that, I think I just wanted to make sure that I recognize Representative Haley and also Baker, who were not included in the attendance, who attended the meeting today. And with that, I also appreciate your flexibility with the change for the agenda. And there are no any other agenda items before us. So the meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much.